and welcome to a special emergency episode of Table Talk. Graham, I wanted to say emergency because, well, I mean, we both listened to The Restless Politics with Alistair Campbell and Rory Stewart, and they've got into their emergency podcast, and I thought we need to just do an emergency episode.
I'm so excited by the fact that we're doing an emergency special episode of the podcast. It feels very official. It feels very,
yeah.
The Rest is Politics, and they're the number one podcast yeah. in the UK right now. So that feels very legit and very exciting.
And we're hot off our event last Thursday. So we're in, for our listeners, just so you know, we were in the Prince of Wales pub in Covent Garden with a guy called Tobias Brown, who basically shared his life story. He grew up in Chicago, ended up in Black Pea Stones, which is a notorious gang out there, told some mad stories. Weren't they, Graham? You could hear a pin drop in the room.
It was amazing. I mean, I think as a 12-year-old boy, to have a gun fall out of your jacket in the middle of church, I was just like, okay, that sort of set the scene for the rest that was to come, really.
Yeah, that's just a little snippet, one of his stories. But that episode will be coming out in a couple of weeks' time, so stay tuned for that. It was awesome evening. Also, I've just got back from XCC, the Extreme Character Challenge. I was in the Brecon Beacons last week doing like they call it an MOT for blokes, you know, just like putting me through my paces. I would say less, it was demanding, but we were just out in the wilderness. And actually, it was kind of the emotional journey of it where they really got you to think about your character, who you are as a friend, as a husband, as a father. They got you to dig deep, and it was absolutely unbelievable. I can't, you know, like rave about it enough. So much so that, Graham, you were like totally locked in, aren't you?
For next I can't year. Wait to do it. I was really, really sad not to be able to go this time round. But Jack, what I wanted to ask you just very quickly, having recorded that episode with James Ray, the founder and like leader of XCC, and now having done an XCC, was it what you were expecting? Were there surprises? Like, how do you reflect on that now?
Okay, so I was most fearful of just being cold and wet in the Brecon Beacons, okay, and just like crying in a wet sleeping bag. But actually, I don't. And I know James kept on alluding to this, like when we interviewed him, that it's like, no, it's more about you being exposed as a man and just being like willing to, I don't know, just to open up is actually more terrifying for blokes often than even being cold in a wet sleeping bag. So I would say it was interesting, actually. He took one of the SAS trainers around the exercise that we did. And he said, yeah, it's a tough exercise. But what's much tougher that you're doing is you guys are not just physically pushing these blokes. As I said, on top of that, you're constantly getting them thinking about themselves. And he said, actually, the combination of those make it pretty extreme. So I'd echo that. Come ready.
Nice. Looking forward to it. Because I think the Brecon Beacons, that is where they do the SAS, some of the SAS training.
It is. The fan dance. It's called the fan dance.
Yeah, okay.
But they have like 40 kg rucksacks. I was like 20 kg, you know? Yeah. So anyway, right. On with our emergency podcast. And sat very quietly in our virtual studio is a guy called Simon Richards, who's we pulled in for our emergency podcast. Simon is the head of public affairs at BCW, which is a global communications agency. And often I've stumbled across Simon's very articulate LinkedIn posts on what on earth is going on in British politics. And I thought, who better to come and help us kind of decipher the last week? Simon, thanks for joining us.
Jack, thanks, Jack and Graham. A few things. One is, on a previous version, you definitely said rambling, and now it's insightful, so I appreciate that. But also, two things. I love, you've always wanted to be able to say emergency pod. I can tell that by looking at your face. But I'm sure, knowing you, you've also always wanted to be able to say you've been out in the wilderness, grappling with the wilderness. So those, you can tick both of those things off your list, mate.
Yeah, I can see the excitement on your face. Actually, Jack, being able to say I've been out in the Brecon Beacons,
love it,
cold and wet, guys, in the wilderness.
You both of you, I'm telling you, both Rick. Of you, you're jealous and you're scared. You're jealous and you're scared.
Yeah, that, yeah.
Come on, XCC. Right. Anyway, enough of that. Enough of that. Waggling on the tee.
Can I also just say, like, on the topic of this being an emergency podcast, and just to set the scene for everyone listening, I am literally, as we speak, I've got the BBC News live feed in front of me, and it is just unfolding. Rishi Sunak has just given a speech.
Yeah.
taking on the mantle of PM. So it's all unfolding as we speak.
Pretty cool. Okay, so Simon, do you want to have a go at just, not a minute by minute or hour by hour, but should we just go day by day what's happened the last week?
What
just quickly for our listeners.
No, just quickly,
because to be fair to our listeners, they're coming in from all around the world. Just give a quick thumbnail, kind of where are we in British politics today?
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Jack. I you can't really use the word unprecedented anymore, can you? But it has sort of been an unprecedented week. So we're now on Monday, as you say. Last Monday, if you remember, we had a new Chancellor who was just announcing the fact that he'd basically taken over as Prime Minister, and he was doing his new fiscal policy, and the Prime Minister, Liz Truss, at the time had to like it or lump it, and she had to like it because otherwise she would have been out even sooner. So that happened. That's a big seismic moment, because she had been elected by the membership, by the Conservative membership, because she was pursuing this sort of right-wing ideology of low taxes, high growth, and sort of spurring that on. And then she released this mini budget with her ex-chancellor, Kwasi Kwarteng, who is a very old, long-time political ally of hers. And that went disastrously. So she had to do something. Firstly, she got rid of him and she didn't take the can herself. And then she brought in the new chancellor. But then everything unraveled over the following days. And essentially, as they always do, the Conservative MPs took control. There is a reason why they are the most successful political party in Europe, because they, whenever they're faced with sort of turmoil, potential problems at the ballot box, they act very fast, and they acted within hours last week. And that's why we get ourselves to a leadership election. You had Boris Johnson flirting with the idea of coming back. I think I was always of the opinion that, again, that was just him. He was doing it for attention, and he was never really going to stand. The poor MPs who backed him, even when he probably wasn't going to ever stand, I don't know what their chances are now. Let's see. I mean, I would have thought Rishi will try and bring a sort of coalition together, and sort of a government of all the talents, I would have thought. And then we have this morning Penny Mordaunt dropping out, and so Rishi Sunak is crowned as leader and probably tomorrow will become Prime Minister. By the way, it is an interesting thing. So my background is as a Conservative staffer, so I put that in my hand in the air now, although I wouldn't say that I'm a Conservative now, given what's happened. But it is interesting from a diversity point of view, though, you have a female followed by the first British Asian as well. Which is a good thing for society.
That's a really helpful summary. But I think there's probably three statistics as well that for me sum up just the sort of chaos of the last few months. One is, this is our fifth...
Is this from Google,
no,
or is this
I'm
from
actually
you?
Not just... Googling these right now. I've read these in the last few days, I promise. No,
okay, so this is just from WikiG.
Yeah,
WikiG.
Exactly. They're in there somewhere. So this is our fifth Prime Minister in 6 years, which is just pretty hard to believe. Liz Truss was the shortest tenured PM in the history of the UK. And I think that goes back to sort of the 1700s, early 1700s. And then Kwasi Kwarteng, who I also love, they started calling him Kamikwazi within about 2 days of him taking over. But he was the second shortest serving chancellor of all time. And the shortest serving chancellor was only shortest serving chancellor because he died of a heart attack after 30 days in the role. And I think, you know, those three things in combination, I think for anyone who hasn't been following this, for me, sort of sums up just the absolute chaos and shambles that British politics has been in the last, well, I mean, it's been like this for a while, but certainly in the last few months, it's been just, you know, it's been one thing after another.
There is a brilliant tweet, sorry, that always goes out when there's all this chaos, which is David Cameron's tweet before the 2015 general election, which is... something like, what would you rather, strong and stable government with the Conservative Party or chaos under Ed Miliband?
Yeah.
And that is always put out at these sorts of times, because it is extraordinary what's happened since 2015.
One question to get us going, because, you know, we've seen the fairy liquid bottle and the lettuce.
the Daily Star.
It was just, but I think they nicked it off someone else, Sky News. Anyway, is there any part of you guys that feels sorry for Liz Truss? and her family, like her teenage daughters, her husband, her, especially as a woman as well. Does any part of you just thinking about her the last week?
You referenced them. The people that I do feel sorry for are her daughters. I don't know how old they are, but they're definitely teenagers.
Yeah.
They didn't choose any of this. And I saw a couple of tweets and we were discussing it at work the other day. Like, it's hard enough being a teenager. And some of my female colleagues were saying harder probably being a teenage girl as well. And they have this that's sort of confronting them and they're having to grapple with it at school. So I feel really sorry for the kids. But on balance, I'm afraid I don't feel sorry for Liz Truss, actually, I'm afraid. If you think about the politics of the situation, she is one of the best players of the political game, basically. This has been an ambition of hers for a very long time. Note the pictures of her in the armoured vehicle with the Maggie Thatcher style. Like, it's all been about getting to this end game. She's played the media, she's played the Tory membership for a long time. And then even when she had a lot of people saying this isn't the right policy to push forward, there's just a lack of humility and a sort of stubbornness there that she thought she was right. And then you have all the ideologues around her who've basically been all of the different think tanks that we could go on and on about, who this has been their cherished moment for 12 years. They've been focused on this and she and they have been proved wrong. And so I think she has to take it on the chin and move on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit torn on this one because there's always a risk with these sorts of public figures. And I think particularly senior politicians, that we sort of dehumanize them. We're very quick to slate them. It's pretty hard for them to get praise for a job well done. I don't think that happens very often. And we're very quick to be very critical and we don't offer many alternative solutions. So yeah, there's an element of it that I feel some compassion towards her because this will have been her dream for a long, long time. As Simon said, this is something she's been going for a long, long time. And she finally got there. And it's hard to sort of overstate just how much it's been a crash and burn situation, you know, and it must be brutal for someone to get to that point that's been a dream for them and then to fail this publicly and this catastrophically is really horrible. Now, so that's the sort of compassionate view for me, is I do want to feel sorry for her from that standpoint. But the thing that I struggle with is she makes it really, really hard, I think, because there's always this sense of real hubris. And almost, it's like, I heard something, I think it was The Rest Is Politics, actually. I think it was Alistair Campbell was saying that there needs to be a sense of imposter syndrome when you get to these very senior level positions. There needs to be an element of humility of sitting in that position and thinking, my goodness, how did I get here? You know, how is it that I have the privilege of leading this entire country? And I never got that sense from her. It was very much a sense of, I'm the smartest person in the room. It, you know, if only they had let me just execute on my plans, this would have all gone great. I mean, to stand out in front of number 10 and give the speech that she gave at the end of it all and say, I took on the mantle in a time of unprecedented economic crisis. And it was just an impossible job. You know, I mean, that's nonsense. Like that, those are the words of someone who is delusional, in my opinion, who genuinely thinks I did a good job and this is just someone else's fault. And so I think it's really hard in that instance to feel sorry for her because she doesn't seem to grasp the fact that she really made a mess of it. So I find it really hard. I don't know. I want to feel compassion for her, but it's really tough when she doesn't seem to think that she did anything wrong.
The thing I can't get in my head is that of all people, she met the Queen before she died. I can't get that out of my head.
But I think for the Queen, she was more keen to see the end of Boris. Like, it wasn't even about Liz. She didn't even see what Liz was going to come up with. She was so keen to go to Boris that she just could do everything she could to be there.
Graham and I chatted about this before. Do we get the leaders we deserve? And we had a great chat about that, didn't we, Graham? But I'd like to kind of expand that question to, do we get the leaders, plural, i.e. the revolving door of leaders, because of our short attention spans and love for drama? Like, is this just now turned into basically soap opera, drama, BBC News updates? We love them. You know, like, how much are we to blame in this? And by we, I'm talking like the whole society. Like, what do we think?
Oh, I think it's a great question. And it's a question that we have to be grappling with the whole time, I think. And I don't think we do grapple with it as much. I think the short answer is yes, for me, absolutely, we do get the leaders we deserve. I've been thinking about this a fair bit recently. For me, I think there's three things. And one is your point. So one, firstly, we want entertainment. That sort of short attention span, the drama piece. We're basically used to being entertained. I was speaking to a former colleague who was in Number 10 a while ago, and he was talking in the soap opera language. Isn't it fascinating? Isn't it exciting? Well, no, not really. No, it's not. It's like the Westminster bubble basically sees it as some sort of Love Island or some sort of Big Brother, because finally they're the centre of attention. They're getting the coverage. They're on the Daily Mail app, you know, something that they'd never normally be on in sort of normal times. But it's not just the politicos, Jack, to your point. It's also that we as a society, I think, are used to that now. And I think that is the crux of it. That's my fundamental worry. Have we reached a place where we want to be entertained rather than led, basically? Have we reached a place where we want to be entertained rather than led? And that has significant implications for us as a society. That's the first point. Second point, I'm afraid I do think the media, and the media will always push back on this because they get blamed probably from sort of both extremes of the sort of right and left ideologies. And they'll always push back saying, no, we're just reporting the truth. But I don't think that's true. I think both social and traditional media is to blame slightly. The sort of the rolling news, the constant feeding of entertainment, of drama, who's saying what, who's thinking what, who's commenting on what, just means that we lose sight of the bigger picture. And then I think traditional media feeds off that. It picks up on what's trending, what seems to be popular. And they both treat politicians in the same way. They both look for the opportunities to bring them down, basically. It's basically like a blood sport. It's like a sort of 21st century Colosseum. That's basically what the media has turned the political drama into.
Are you not entertained?
Exactly. And are we
you not entertained?
Like, what's the answer to that? Are we?
Yes.
And if we are, great. But what's the damage to society? Like, it is. But then that the problem with all of the with points one and two is that means that three. It's no longer an attractive career. Why on earth would you be a politician right now? I mean, seriously, why would you be a politician? And ultimately, as a result of that, you see a different set of characters going into politics than you may have once done. And I'm afraid people who ultimately aren't as good. And I think we have ourselves to blame for that. They get criticised left, right and centre. They get abused on social media on a daily basis. So who would want to be one? Ultimately, those are my...
Wow.
That's my sort of...
Yeah, I mean, any thoughts, Jack?
I love this quote from Tim Farron. Politics is show business for ugly people.
And he's exactly right.
But do you know what's interesting, though? I feel like what it's turned into is show business... but it's actually become quite popular show business. Does that make sense? It's like now is actually trending more than show business.
And do you know what I think is a bit of an issue as well? It's that the nature of media and entertainment these days, like if you've ever watched any of these sort of reality TV shows like Below Deck or any of these sorts of things that just sort of hook you in and everything is a cliffhanger. Every single episode, even when they put the adverts in, it's just to sort of hook you in. And I think that as soon as you sort of copy and paste that model onto things that actually matter, i.e. like how do we govern a country, it just, because these are not flashy, exciting, sexy things. Like economics is boring. Mm. I mean, governing is boring. Like, and it's, you know, but it's so, so important. And I think that as soon as you try and distill that down into, you know, 240 characters for a tweet or a quick soundbite for 24-hour news, you have to distill really nuanced, complex subjects down into it's either this or that. It's either yes or no. It's either brilliant or terrible.
I've got a point on this, right? Sorry to bring it back to the rest is politics. But what I love...
You guys are obsessed.
No, just quickly. What about podcasts I love is... It's a bit of long form content. Like amongst all of the clickbait, you've got two grown ups and they've been around the houses, Rory Stewart and Alistair Campbell. They know a thing or two, but it's long form, so it actually gives space to have a proper conversation rather than PMQs. It's a complete joke. Mm. It's a joke. It is just news bait. Bang 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 bang
totally.
Bang.
And I think I completely agree, Jack. And the other thing that's great about it is that they are two people with opposing views who are very tolerant of each other. Like, they're very respectful towards each other, even though they disagree.
One more so than the other.
Yeah, I would say if there were two Alistair Campbells on the show, it'd get pretty... Yeah. Anyway, right, that's enough of that, because this is... We're also trending in the UK podcast charts. So
yeah, so, you know, don't worry. We'll be up there soon. We'll start selling out.
So what sort of leaders do we actually want? You know, like, ones that are good at sound bites, or do we want the truth? And isn't it interesting that Rishi was like, you know, stood up all summer, was a little bit boring. He told the truth. He said, this is how it's going to pan out. And everyone's like, oh, shut up, Rishi. You can't just say the truth. You can't just... you know, ramble on about your economics, because no one wants to hear that. And then what I'm quite, I don't know, I just think it's quite interesting that now he's actually going to be PM. But again, leading up to election, everyone will be like, oh, Rishi, shut up. Don't just say the bad news. Just like polish the turd, like make it a bit more exciting.
At least roll it glitter.
But maybe he won't. Maybe he will just tell the truth, serve the country, tell us what we need to hear. Simon, what do you think?
But it goes back to Graham's point just now and the stuff you've just been saying, Jack. This is where the art of leadership is so important. And I think it's a bit of both, essentially. And ultimately, I think we've lacked real leaders for a fair amount of time now in this, not even in this country, I think globally, and probably for the reasons that we've been talking about already. But when you think of the best sort of leaders in your mind, I wonder where we go to. I can certainly think of a few. And I think they nailed the mixture of both. On the one hand, we want leaders who are in it for public good, to serve, who really know the detail of it. But then we also... and this is a sort of big buzz. We also need people to properly lead. If we've been taught anything over the last few years, I think it's that populism is ultimately pretty dangerous, actually. And what we haven't had over the last few years is people standing up and saying difficult things, even when it's not what we want. And so I think it falls on us, actually, really, as a society. We need to be able to take those unpopular things, because we can see that the people who are saying it are genuine, they're authentic in what they're saying. So I think it's chicken and egg between the two.
And do you know what I think is one healthy outcome of this? I hope. I think for a little while, politics had somewhat become a bit of a sideshow. It had become a little bit irrelevant. You know, there was a period of time there where there was, I just sort of lost interest in it, because it was just sort of, I wasn't that impressed by them. I just sort of thought, look, do you know what?
Is that a bad or
a good thing? I'm saying it's a bad thing. I'm saying it's a really bad thing. And I'm saying that I hope now it will be, it's proven just how relevant it always is, and just how disastrous it can be to get someone who is not equipped to do it into that role, and the mess that can be made and the real damage to society. And I think this is something that people have been saying as well, that they're really annoyed about the Tory party, is all these folks standing up and saying how upset they are by this situation have always... the final sentence of their rant has been, and look at the damage they've done to the Tory party. Well, forget the Tory party. What about the country? What about all the people who are now can't afford their mortgages or can't afford their energy bills? Or, I mean, it's just unbelievable the damage that's been done. And I feel like this sort of sense of it operates in a microcosm, and, oh, they've damaged the Tory party and it'll be a landslide for Labour. Who cares? That should be the least of your concern. What about your constituents who are struggling now? You know, I hope it brings it back to a position where actually politics is so important, and we have to get it right. And it has real meaningful outcomes if it goes wrong. So my hope is that it becomes a bit more central and people take it a bit more seriously. And I'm just...
But what does it mean actually to take it seriously? Like, does that mean that you take the time to just slow down and read more, actually read about policies? Does it mean we have to become economics experts? Like,
I think, I mean, and I am Googling this because I don't have these stats off the top of my head, but I'm Googling it as we speak.
Okay,
and if I think, if you look at the voter turnout, it's kind of been low mid-60s since the early 2000s. 2001 general election, it was 59%. You know, you think, well, so 40% of eligible voters just didn't bother, you know, and not, I mean, I was one of them. I didn't vote in some of those general elections because I just didn't care. I hope, like, you know, I've been voting in the more recent ones. I can assure you.
Look at Simon's face. Look at Simon's face.
You know what I mean? Like, I think even that, like, okay, you have a vote and it's really, really important. So to get the voter turnout up, I hope, is one of the things that starts to happen now. But also, I mean, if you were to ask, you know, 100 people in the street, have you read the Tory, Labour and Lib Dem manifestos. I'm only picking those three as the sort of biggest part. But have you read their manifestos? Do you actually know in detail what they're saying they're going to go and do and what they think will happen as a result? I don't know what percentage you would get back as having said yes, and I fully understand them. Like, pretty low. That, as it turns out, is really quite important, right? So I would hope that it results in people taking more of a keen interest and actually, you know, sort of digging into this and understanding and holding their MP's feet to the fire on this and saying, this is what you stand for. I'm going to vote for you and you better go and do it. And just a bit more engagement in it, because it's democracy at the end of the day. That's how it's supposed to work. And I think we've all taken it for granted for quite a while. I certainly have. And I think we're starting to see the outcome of that.
No, I think Graham's absolutely right. Hopefully people will start seeing that politics has significant implications. In a way, we've been quite fortunate living in the UK,
yeah,
and probably in the Western world, actually, over the last 20, 30, 40 years. It's been a period of sort of calm, hasn't it? And I think people have probably got a bit lulled into a false sense of security of what dangerous political ideology, I'm not saying that from a UK perspective, but more broadly, what it might look like and the implications that it has. We need to be, as a society, really grappling with this. The one thing I would say is, to be fair, I don't know whether that is just on society. I would actually push that back to the political class as well and the media class as well.
Yeah.
How are you engaging with every single person in society? It's not just the well-read who read their weekend papers or whatever. It's everyone in society. And how are you reaching out to those people? That, I think, is on the politicians, not on society. So hopefully a bit of both can happen over the next few years.
Okay, so an interesting thing, right? What does the Bible say about how we're to interact with politics? Yeah, it doesn't say loads. It does say consistently, basically, you get the leaders you deserved, and you see that through the history of the Bible, and that's quite interesting. And we've agreed with that as well. But the one thing that it does say is pray for those in charge. And I thought, never more have I actually wanted to pray for Rishi Sunak. Like, he stood up today and he's like, guys, this is going to be tough. And you're just like, yes, Rishi, this is going to be tough. And I think lots of our listeners, you know, they're not religious and they probably don't pray. But it is interesting, isn't it, that God is like, feel sorry for these people. And, well, not feel sorry for them, but at least pray for them. They have got a tough job and they need God's help. It is one of the hardest jobs going to govern a country, right? I can't think of a tougher job personally, in terms of complexity, in terms of your character being under scrutiny, in terms of just the uncertainty of what you're facing into. And I guess that would be the only other thing, Graham, that I'd just throw into the mix is, sure, read policy, sure, turn out to vote. But it's interesting, isn't it? Like, who actually can hand on heart say, yeah, I've prayed for my prime minister regularly, sincerely. Do you even believe God exists and he can help them, I guess, is a bigger question. But this is Table Talk. We're there to ask these sort of questions. So God help Rishi Sunak.
You're completely right. At church in the past, I wonder whether we have paid a bit of lip service to praying for leaders previously. Sometimes, if you think about it sort of from the front, if we're praying our sort of corporate prayers, where we pray for what we'll pray for, like wisdom for them, we'll pray broadly for those in authority, basically. I hope what the last few weeks, what months, what the last few years have taught us actually is just how fundamental a prayer that is. Our leaders shape our country and our society. So what, as you said, Jack, what more of importance could you be praying about as a Christian? Can be praying for and about, really. I completely agree with you.
And interesting, I'd love to hear from listeners who aren't religious to be like, what hope is there if it wasn't for God's kindness to our leaders? I'm just amazed they get as far as they do, to be honest. It's just an absolute minefield out there. I know there are good inverted commas people out there, but it's just such a tough job. I definitely wouldn't go for it. Simon, are you thinking about going for it?
I did want to.
Really?
I always want to. Definitely, but not anymore, I don't think. I'm all right. For the reasons we've discussed, why would you want to go into it?
Not for me, I don't think, Jacko. Not anytime soon. I think, interestingly though, I think post-job, it does sound quite attractive.
Right, yes.
You know, having heard about or Bojo going out and earning a couple of $100K for a speech, and Liz Truss being eligible for 150 grand a year for the rest of her life. Like, you know, I mean, I didn't actually know about these sorts of things. So
Bojo was literally in the Caribbean, flew to the US for a morning speech, pocketed 150 grand, flew back, cocktail in hand in the afternoon. Yeah, I mean,
not a bad gig. But I think, you know, yeah, I'm not sure it'd be entirely worth it for the slog of getting through being in that sort of a role. You know, it's just, it's almost an impossible job in some ways because you can't please everyone. There will always be someone dissatisfied with what you're doing. So I don't know. It's a really, really tough gig. So yeah, I do feel a lot of compassion for these folks that are in those roles. And I do think we're overly critical of them a lot of the time, but.
Well, guys. It's been great to have an emergency podcast. I'm slightly worried that we are...
We need a tally of how many times emergency...
Okay. Well, also, we're hypocrites because we've been saying, oh, you know, the media. We are the media. You know, we're feeding the frenzy. I just saw in the ticker reel that... What did Rishi say? He said, the UK faces profound economic challenge that he will work day in, day out for the country. There we go. There's the latest news. What's exciting is our next live event is on this subject, which is political leadership and how Christianity plays into that. And we've mentioned a quote from him, Tim Farron, ex-leader of the Liberal Democrats, is going to do a live event with us. And we thought this would be a great opportunity just to gather some people's questions, like the ones we've been chatting through. Like, is this a reflection, this sort of turmoil in leadership, a reflection of our society at the moment? What does it take to be a good leader? And sure, Tim Farron, he had a pretty tough ride. He could share what it's like as well from his point of view and his reflections. But I'm really excited about it.
So excited about that one.
Yeah.
And as you say, Jack, I think, you know, yes, from a Christian perspective, it'd be really, really interesting. But just from an inside perspective, you know, what is that like? What is it like to be in a prominent position as a senior politician? It's going to be great.
Simon, have you ever met Tim Farron?
I have a bit of a fanboy crush on Tim. I'm a big, big fan. So I'm going to come, but I'm going to sit at the back. I won't try and sort of, I'll try and grab him afterwards, but I'm just obsessed with it. I think he's a really interesting character, a really interesting guy.
Okay, well, that is the 22nd of November, so just under a month's time. It's going to be in Fulham. We don't know how big to make the venue, genuinely. I know this. I mean, literally sound like Alistair Campbell now, don't we? But it's not going to be the London Palladium. It's probably not going to be a Hammersmith Apollo. But it might be the Stony Pony, the White Horse in Parsons Green. We're thinking upstairs there, or maybe bigger, depending on how many people want to come. Yeah. Get in touch. Hit us up on Instagram. We'll set up a Facebook event as well for it. And we'd love to see lots of you listeners come in for that. It'd be brilliant.
It's going to be epic. Looking forward to it. See you on the 22nd. And Simon, thanks so much for joining us on our emergency podcast. It's been brilliant.
Okay.